Welcome back to the Buffalo Bread Podcast. We are here today to preview the Bills-Jets Monday night showdown in week six. Bills and Jets both coming off of losses and, you know, in a little bit of a situation where the Bills looked very, very poor. The Jets kind of hung with it, but also got absolutely trounced. And so both teams are going to be hungry for a win. And, you know, what you, our listening audience, are not going to be hungry for is a guest potter. We've got Jared Zeidman back with us as our Jets in-house expert to talk about everything Jets in this upcoming matchup, including the ousting of Robert Saleh today. Jared, welcome to the pod. How are you doing?
Nom, 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 nom. I am also hungry, JJ. Just when you think you can't be more puzzled with an organization, they just find new ways to mystify. Very excited to use the two of you as my psychiatrist this evening.
I'm very looking much so forward to playing this role with you, Jared. It's going to be great. Welcome to our office. Take a seat on the couch. Let's get started. Before we can dig into any X's and O's, I do think we've got to talk about the Saleh firing. For those of you listening to this pod, the firing just happened today. So there may be other news bits, tidbits that have broken about this story since the recording of this pod. But the main feature going is that Robert Saleh was walked out by security from the Jets facility today, having no idea that this would be his last day of work. It is becoming more commonplace, I think, for head coaches to be let go midseason. But this one really struck me as a surprise because of when it happened, because of the timing, and because of what appeared to be a pretty closed, siloed decision-making loop around this decision. It seemed to be all Woody Johnson making this call, really without the benefit of Joe Douglas's advice based on what we know at this point. So, Jared, from your perspective, what do you think about the firing, the timing, and then what does this mean for the Jets season moving forward?
I'd like to start by saying that I have enough humility to not run around in circles, banging a drum, yelling, "I told you so," when we last spoke. If you were willing to indulge me, I'd like to break this down into three pieces. Having just spoken off air about how we all worked in higher ed, one of the higher ed lessons we learn is there's three sides to the story. There's what party A says, there's what party B says, and then we, you know, determine what's the truth. Here is what I think the truth is, okay? And here is part one. I think that every problem that every problem that the Jets have stems from ownership hiring people with a great strength in one category and a gigantic blind spot that they tried to overcome on their own. Let's start with Joe Douglas. Joe Douglas, I'm hand to God mean this, Joe Douglas scouts better than any GM in football. I cannot believe how good his drafts have been since he have taken over the Jets. Joe Douglas manages signings and personnel worse than any GM in football. And when you put those two things together, you have an average general manager. Hassan Reddick is sitting somewhere laughing about today. You know, and that's Joe Douglas's recent attempt. He got rid of LaFleur. Matt LaFleur is the head coach. He got rid of LaFleur's brother, who was dynamic in his role as an offensive coordinator, and brought in Hackett, who is really, really overly vanilla in his offense. And the Jets, this is a made-up stat, but I believe it's true, lead the NFL in play designs that were made before the year 2007. That is what I believe the Jets do. So problem number one is lopsided skills with the GM. Problem number two, lopsided, short-sighted GM hires Robert Saleh, a guy who made a killing as a defensive coordinator, but his boss was an offensive genius that basically said, I'm never going to look at the defense. I'm never going to look at the defense. You make the defense good, and that's your job. And what we're realizing is that this guy doesn't understand how to lead. And I actually think at some point in his career, he's going to get another crack at this, because I think he does all of the correct things besides teach offense, develop offensive players, and manage it. Turns out your head coach should be able to do those. Okay? And now here's problem three. As these two people are on a journey together, they realize that they're talented enough to win and that they're not winning and that they're going to need to take a huge risk or else they're both going to lose their jobs. And they fall for, I guess we'll call it the pseudo event marketing of Aaron Rodgers. You got to bring me in and you got to bring my guy in because my guy knows how I like to play offense and my guy will teach these young whippersnappers how to play football. In my life, I have never seen more missed routes than last weekend's game against the Vikings. I have never seen that in my lifetime of watching professional football. There were a minimum of 12 incomplete passes after, I hate oversimplifying it, a receiver zigging when they should have zagged. So the most recent report that I read when I hopped on this podcast, before I hopped on this podcast, was that sources familiar with Robert Saleh's knowledge, which if you've ever had any media experience means Robert Saleh. Robert Saleh was planning on firing Nathaniel Hackett today. So what I think happened, based on everything I just shared, is Aaron Rodgers figures it out. Aaron Rodgers goes to Wood and Johnson. Aaron Rodgers holds the team ransom. Saleh's out. And I believe with every fiber of my being, there's going to be a movie about this like 10 to 15 years from now. And Saleh was escorted out by security because of a heightened confrontation with Aaron Rodgers. And the number one thing that makes me believe all this is 3 weeks ago, through his agent, Hassan Reddick said, "You guys think I'm ending this holdout. I'm not in no rush to be there. It's dysfunctional. I talk to the players. You don't. They all hate Aaron Rodgers. They all think they're not being coached. I'm chilling. I'll pay my fine and I'll just stay healthy and I won't tank my career." And Aaron Rodgers went to his media source, Pat McAfee, to deny those rumors. Hassan Reddick looks like the most honest person in the room. And you guys can charge me whatever hourly fee for that.
Okay? Nope.
Thank you for listening. Hey.
It's free today. It's free today.
I truly believe that that is exactly how this went down, and those are the factors.
JJ, I have lots of questions for Jared. I don't want to suck the oxygen out of the room, though. Do you have questions for Jared about this, or do you want me to hop right in?
Okay, I have one question because I haven't watched as much Jets football this season as I'm sure Jared has. What the actual hell is going on with Aaron Rodgers? Like, what has happened to him? What has happened to him? And is it play design? Is it Aaron not making the throws? What's going on?
I want to give Aaron Rodgers credit for one thing. Aaron Rodgers still has a cannon.
Yeah.
He is still out there throwing darts. What I think has happened to Aaron Rodgers is, time and ego. And I can concisely say this. The Aaron Rodgers that we're seeing right now has not changed in any way, for better or for worse, from the Aaron Rodgers that we saw explode onto the scene in 2007, throwing darts to Donald Driver and Greg Jennings, right? Like, he's the same dude. But the game has changed around him. And now he's playing on a team that is dead last in the league in pre-snap motion, is first in the league in him calling plays at the line of scrimmage. And he's got young wide receivers that don't play football like that. He's got tight ends that don't play football like that. And he has two explosive running backs that when he gets to the line of scrimmage, he does not want to give the ball to. He threw 54 passes against the best pass defense in football. 54. It's ego. This is not the game that Aaron Rodgers once dominated. And you can be as talented as you want, but if you're that stubborn, and you're supposed to be leading the team, your players are going to see through that. And I think that's what's happening right now.
That's a great way to kind of wrap and summarize that. I will say, I think he's the same. He is the same Aaron Rodgers. I definitely recognize the arm strength there, minus the lower body. His mobility is absolutely shot. And you'd expect that from a 40-plus-year-old quarterback, right? Like, his mobility is absolutely shot.
40-year-old quarterback recovering from an Achilles injury. Yeah. And the, with Moses being out for the extent that he's been out too, like, it, the depth on the offensive line has been tested these past 2 weeks. and has really failed that test generally over the season. The Jets have been good at maintaining a clean pocket for Rodgers, and his second reaction throws when he's had to move, particularly in that Patriots game, they've looked pretty good. But I mean, there's only so sustainable that can be with a 40-year-old QB behind a really patchwork offensive line that is injured at this point. The bet that Joe Douglas made on signing some of these old injured offensive linemen thus far has not paid off because they've proven to be injury prone, which is what they were before they were signed, right? High risk, high reward. And unfortunately, it's been all risk over the past 2 weeks for this O-line. Jared, I want to zoom out a little bit. When a team fires a coach midseason, they are normally putting themselves on the market early, saying, hey, any possible coaching prospect, Ben Johnson, Mike Vrabel, Bill Belichick, Slowick out of Houston, who JJ and I had the unfortunate is situation of running into this past right. week. Like normally it's an advertisement for we are in business, we will be open. If you're a prospective head coach, though, you've got an aging roster with a QB who I believe is on the last guaranteed year of this deal that he signed. He's only getting further advanced into the age of 40. If you're a prospective or an up-and-coming head coach candidate, outside of this is one of the only 32 opportunities you have to head coach, what is it that the Jets are using to attract a new head coach candidate that is currently on the roster? Like, what is appealing about this job at this stage and this state of the team?
This is going to sound corny, but I think the thing that they're using is a Woody Johnson epiphany. Let me be a little bit more specific. I can only think of one other team that has a more stereotypical brand of football than the New York Jets, and it's the Chicago Bears. The New York Jets have never been an offensive franchise. Joe Namath won a Super Bowl not being very good at quarterback, though I hear his game with the ladies is very strong. So I just think that what we're seeing here is, and we can really categorize this, like, because you asked me to look at a big picture. Eric Mangini to Rex Ryan to Todd Bowles, Adam Gase, who I guess you could count as an offensive coach, but we're going to let him as an offensive coach at all.
To Robert Saleh. Yeah.
When the Jets are good, it's because their defense is good and their offense manages the game. Their offense has never been exceptional. And I think what he just saw is we can have a middle of the pack defense, but the fact that we can't produce offensively with the pieces we have is never going to win us this league. Forget about getting us deep in the playoffs. We can't win this league. And the person that really stands out to me in all this, and I'd love to be right about him because I like him as a coach, is Brian Schottenheimer, who I think was the best offensive coordinator in the last 20 years of Jets football, who's now 50, who has still never been a head coach, who I think realistically could get a crack at this team. But I think the epiphany Woody Johnson has is I have to bring someone in offensive-minded who does the exact same thing that, oh my God, I'm drawing a blank on the San Francisco 49ers coach's name.
Kyle Shanahan.
There we go, Kyle Shanahan. The same thing Kyle Shanahan did to Robert Saleh. I'm doing everything with offense. I need you to run the defense, and I need to give you autonomy, and I'm just going to trust you, and you're going to get it done because that's what Jets football does. I'm responsible for cleaning up this other mess. You can't look at the Jets offense on paper and say to me, this isn't a wild card team, at least, if they're being coached well.
I mean, the defense, for sure. That's been the case for years with mm-hmm. you guys. The issue has been the offense, absolutely. And this is one of those areas where I think you're right to credit Douglas with, like, he has nailed particularly first and second round picks well, mm-hmm. except for the QB position, right?
Right.
Like, and that is what puts him in the category of GMs that he is, which is like good but not great, because he hasn't nailed the most important position. He's up there with like Chris Ballard in Indianapolis, who builds a solid roster through the draft and free agency every year, but has not nailed the most important position. And as a result, the team has been kind of wallowing, right? So that brings me to my next question. Is Joe Douglas going to be allowed to hire the next head coach? Or are you guys, because you're in an interesting position. You're only a game back of the AFC East lead. You guys win on Monday. You are in first place because of the tiebreaker with the Bills in the AFC East. Like, you could still make the playoffs this year, but this feels like the beginning of a domino effect where the head coach is gone. The guy who hired that head coach probably is gone, but you're still a really competitive team that's fighting for a playoff spot. It feels like it feels weird to be in this place that you're at and this level of uncertainty when the squad is still really competitive. So my question for you is, depending on how the season goes, is Joe Douglas going to make the next head coaching hire in New York, or is it going to be somebody else?
This is a really good question. And I want to see what comes out in terms of more information about the Saleh firing, in the next 2 weeks. But I would still say 80-20, Joe Douglas actually keeps his job.
Fascinating. Okay.
Here is my why. He truly has drafted so well. And the Jets are a really unique team in that when you look at their young players compared to their biggest free agent acquisitions, their younger players are all better. They're all better. And what I think is going to happen here is I think the one thing that we don't have is access to the most powerful meeting room, head coach, GM, owner. And the more this plays out, the more I do get a sense that Saleh convinced Douglas to sign Rodgers. And there's a lot of money tied up with Rodgers. So now the Jets have to take different financial risks on different pieces. It's the reason why Hassan Reddick is still holding out, because he's trying to call the Jets bluff. It's the reason why they had to bring in oft-injured players and kind of give them second chances, both on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. And I think he could look at Woody Johnson and be like, listen, I tried to give this head coach what it took for him to cook. It handcuffed me. And look at the ingredients I've brought you through the draft. That's my 80% why I think he gets to keep his job. But here's what I also will say. The only thing we haven't discussed is what happens if absolutely nothing changes with this Robert Saleh firing? Like, what happens if the Jets really stink up for the rest of the season? That's the 20% where I'm like, he's out. I think if the Jets finish hovering around 500, you know, unfortunately, it's two consecutive lost seasons where we're just talking in hypotheticals, but I don't think that's on Joe Douglas. We'll have to wait and see. I'm really interested in seeing what more details come the next week or so.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Because again, the roster is good enough. Now it's all a question of coaching. And this is a bet, like you said, if it really was a choice between Saleh and Hackett, it's a bet that the offense that, I love how you put it, the offense that is running a 2007 playbook. Another metric to go by, motion is like the thing that all offenses do to give you a read on pre-snap read on zone versus man versus who's on what. The Jets are running the least amount of pre-snap motion in the league this season. And by a lot, by a lot.
May I say something, Dan, because what you just said is really interesting. I'm not going to claim to know more about football than I do about the sport I coach collegiate. Definitely know more about basketball than I know about football. But the thing I know the most as a coach is organizational leadership. And what does it tell you that the only other person on the staff with head coaching experience at the professional level doesn't even get mentioned when people are talking about, like, even the media? The media's like, well, who's the interim going to be? And the assumption is, because it's definitely not Hackett.
It's not. And it was bad in Denver.
Right. They bypass the one with head coaching experience and give someone with no head coaching experience. And again, on the side of the ball where there are not problems, they're giving him a shot. So, I mean, what you just said is the thing that they can't escape. I think it's a foregone conclusion that Hackett's out at the end of the year. And I really think that this happened in the order it happened because Aaron Rodgers is threatening to walk because he's a psycho.
Yeah. He's like, I will sit the rest of the season if you keep Salah here, because so Aaron Rodgers is an absolute nightmare fuel diva, like to the point where it's like, it's obscene. And it's so funny to like, I mean, when you watch Jets games, you see him with the side eye and like the judgment. He is the worst poker face in the world when a player disappoints him of anybody I've ever seen in any professional sport. It's ridiculous. Like, he will stare people down when they make a mistake. And it's like, what? How are you going to be the leader of a team with that level of ire and distaste?
And this is, by the way, act one of the 15 years from now Jets Fall Apart movie is going to be all about this offseason when Robert Saleh put a C on Aaron Rodgers' chest, said, lead this team. And he said, oh, I'm going to go to Egypt, actually. I hear there's really good darkness retreats there. Like, it's insane. And like, you know, I understand how the waspy contingent of Jets fans wants to see when Garrett Wilson gets mad at Aaron Rodgers, punks him out on the sideline, and we want to be mad at Garrett Wilson. Oh, you got to be more disciplined. You can't act like that in the game. I don't know, man. I've done everything that I've been asked to do, and my captain would literally rather do anything than lead this team. He would rather campaign with RFK than lead this team. He would rather go on Pat McAfee than lead this team. And, you know, did you guys hear about the Saquon Barkley thing last week with Dan Patrick?
I don't know that I'm familiar.
Nope.
As football guys, you will respect and appreciate this. Saquon Barkley drops a pass. Eagles end up losing a game late. That drop pass ended up being super consequential. He had a contracted appearance with the Dan Patrick show the next day. And he shot Dan Patrick a text that was like, I'm sorry to do this to you. It's not right for me to be here. You know, I have to be by my team right now. Rodgers was an advertised guest after the firing on the Pat McAfee show today. And the team pulled him out of it. The team called a mandatory team meeting and pulled him out of the appearance. But no, don't worry, guys. He's going on Pat McAfee tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
That's who we're dealing with.
Well, I think that as Bills fans, we recognize that because we saw it last year. When he was, you know, everywhere in the media he could be, trying to center stage and main character everyone about his probable return in an insanely fast timeline from a serious Achilles injury, just to still be part of the conversation. And it was, I think anyone who pays attention to the sport was like, there's no way this person is going to be healthy enough to start a game of football in January for the Jets if they make it to the playoffs.
You know, I know I was making a joke before when I talked about psychiatry stuff, but I'm asking this to you. You guys are super knowledgeable individuals about this sport. Does he not strike you as a textbook narcissist football player?
Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I'm not in a position to professionally diagnose, but I do think the behavior, like, let's compare it to the great divas of all time, Terrell Owens, right? Of recent Bills Mafia memory and Minnesota Vikings memory, Stefon Diggs. These are behaviors and these are things that Rodgers is doing that are normally detractors from team success. They earn the ire of the fan base. They earn the ire of the media market that you're in. And for whatever reason, Rodgers seems pretty immune to this, immune from any real criticism or feedback around these things. And I don't know why he feels so Teflon-y when it comes to this. Part of it is, I think he in Green Bay was genuinely liked by the locker room right up until the last moment, right? And even as recently as last season, I mean, he didn't play a snap. He played, four snaps for you guys. But like, didn't he get some award from the players, like most inspiring last year? You know what I mean? So like, I think the difference is, like, he is generally well-liked. The ire and the divahood and all that stuff is usually outward-facing, and it's usually attacking people that are, like, coming at the team. like his most verbal criticisms go to people that criticize him and criticize the team for the most part. And I think I even think back to his time in Green Bay with the whole relax thing, right? Like, we're going to be fine. Like, his persona, public facing, is irritating and grating, but it is never focused on the people inside the locker room. Whereas the Terrell Owens, Stephon Diggs, they go after people that are sharing the same uniform as them. And that seems to be the line of demarcation between a guy like Rodgers getting the bye that he gets versus a guy like Diggs or Owens.
You just said something really interesting to me that we did not really entertain. Because of Aaron Rodgers' really, really late MVP in Green Bay that kept him really relevant in terms of physical ability. Forget about quarterbacking, like eye or leadership, his physical quarterbacking ability. Even when he got hurt and fell off a little bit, you didn't really care as a fan of the sport because you knew this guy just had this MVP year. So what you just talked about with accountability, Aaron Rodgers at no point in his professional career has actually had to field criticism of his play. He fielded the criticism on behalf of the team, and his ability to deflect and counter and fight and stand up for his buddies, I think, always earned his locker room's respect. There is no defense. The team, let me actually say it this way, Dan. The team did not throw 54 passes, most of which were determined at the line of scrimmage. The team did not throw three interceptions against the best pass defense in football. The team did not decide to basically audible about out of every run that was called. Aaron did that. And, you know, I hate saying it this way, but like, the mighty have fallen.
Yeah, that's great. That is a great, I think, closing statement about this particular quarterback of the New Jersey Jets. We should pivot now to talk a little bit about the X's and O's of this upcoming matchup between those Jets and the Buffalo Bills. As I mentioned in the show open, we are both teams coming off of disappointing losses. You know, the Bills to Houston on Sunday at 1, and then the Jets on Sunday morning in Tottenham Stadium in London to the Sam Darnold-led Minnesota Vikings. What was that like as a Jets fan to watch Sam Darnold dice up your team after his, you know, unceremonious exit, having been a selection of the New York Jets?
It was awesome. And I mean, that's yeah. Serious.
You vote awesome. For the player. You were rooting for Sam.
Yeah. And what young quarterback has gotten a fair shake for this team literally since I've been in high school?
Right.
So good. Exactly. Revenge. I like, literally, if I had the ability to exclusively schedule the Broncos, Seahawks, and Vikings to play this year's Jets team, I would.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
But, you know, the only other thing I'll say concisely is the Jets, from an X's and O's perspective, are predictable on both sides of the ball. And I think they've faced a coaching staff that really has their act together and knew what they wanted to pick on. Specifically, I think somebody in a scouting room on a Tuesday morning in Minneapolis said, I think we could get Aaron Rodgers to check out of all of his run plays. And I think we can get him to throw the ball up the middle. And I think we can rush him and, like, really cause chaos. And that guy probably earned a raise.
Right. Yeah.
So good for him.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Nathaniel Hackett's whole scheme design is from 2007. It's worth noting that Nathaniel Hackett was the Bills OC around 2007. At that time was also terrible. And also his greatest claim to fame was that he's the son of a state championship winning high school football coach, which is the level of depth and complexity of the offense that he's currently running in the NFL.
I've never seen him. This is going to sound so deeply offensive, and I don't mean it to, but I've never seen him speak in a full sentence to Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah.
Like, whenever they show him on the sidelines, you could tell he's just like, what do you think, Aaron? And Aaron says whatever he wants, and he goes,
sounds
good.
Let's
do it, bucko. Like, yeah. Let's do it.
I mean, that is the hallmark, though, of a personality type like Aaron Rodgers. They need to constantly feel like the smartest person in the room and have a platform to do that. And despite Rodgers' media persona, his biggest platform of validation is being a QB. So having this is why him and LaFleur didn't get along. It's because LaFleur actually had a vision for what he wanted the offense to be, and it was at odds with what Rodgers thought it should be. Hackett does not provide that level of intellectual conflict for Rodgers, and that's why Rodgers likes to keep him around all the time, right?
Like, what a good phrase.
Like, he just doesn't challenge Rodgers in a way that makes him uncomfortable, right? Like, that is the warm blanket of narcissism, is to surround yourself with people that will always tell you you're right. And that's just what Rodgers is.
How's that for X's and O's? Right back to Freud's drawing board, JJ.
We wanted to talk play design, and where we got to was the interplay of personalities.
But we can bring it back to play design. Yes. So let's talk about that, because this is such a fascinating matchup. And Jared, I will say that, like, for all of the Josh Allen is the Dolphins' daddy talk there has been over the last few years, the Jets have really made life hell for Allen, particularly when he tries to pass the ball. Last year, when Brady took over, in the second game that the Jets and Bills played in Buffalo, it really focused on hammering the weakness that you guys were displaying that year in the run D, and really generated a lot of EPA per play and generated a lot of success through the run game. That door is still open, I would say, heading into Monday to exploit the Jets on the run game. But you guys are a little bit more effective at this point than you were last year. Your DVOA numbers against the run are about average, middle of the pack, whereas last year at this time, they were bottom third. Your efficiency numbers against the run defensively, like, you're a top 10 unit, right? And the Bills' offense is not rushing at a particularly efficient rate this year. They're still in the top 10, but this is a more favorable matchup for the Jets defense than it was last season. Yes. And for me, I think this is the place where I want to start the conversation. If over the last 2 weeks, the Texans and the Ravens have shown, if you can disrupt the first thing Joe Brady wants to do, which is run the ball with efficacy to keep the team on schedule, he does not have a scheme answer in the passing game to counter that. So, Jared, what is your confidence level heading into this game that the Jets will be able to stop James Cook and this Buffalo Bills offensive line from running the ball like they did last season in the second game?
Let me tell you that I have never been less confident in the Jets in my entire life. So I, like, if they compete, they compete. I do not expect them to win this game. We start there. But to answer your more specific question about stopping the run, I think that Houston, and I'm sure you guys alluded to this, gave the rest of the league a bit of a blueprint about stopping the Bills. And I think another problem with X's and O's and personnel that the Bills are going to face is, I don't know if they're trying to shoehorn Keon Coleman into that. Like, you're our guy. When the going gets tough, we're looking at you. But there were a lot of blunders. I mean, he got hit in the head with the football on a slant route. That wasn't very good. And they're... were across the board, it kind of looked like the fourth quarter of that game was an audition to see who was going to be the playmaking receiver for the Bills. And there were tons of miscommunications and tons of bad spots. So I think if you're the Jets, we build on what you just talked about, Dan, which is you're going to stuff the run. You're going to limit them to what I would describe as your West Coast style gains. Okay, like, I'll deal with the check down. I'll deal with a, you know, two-headed dragon tight end reception, you know. And from there, we are just going to make them try to make a big play down the field. And when they struggle to do it, because we're going to bring pressure and they struggle to run, we're just going to deal with them kicking a field goal. And we're going to hope we can make it up. And, like, that's going to be the kind of game, is a 2013 kind of game, I think, is the Jets' strategy. I think in order to use James Cook the way you're capable of, don't you kind of get the impression they have to check down, not maybe not even check down, but like design short yardage pass to him more and just give him a chance to break something? Is that the feeling you get after the Houston game?
Oh, I mean, it's pretty much, I was so disappointed in the Houston game that they didn't do that more. because James Cook this season and even last season, in any pass he catches within 5 to 10 yards of the line of scrimmage, almost guaranteed he's going to break the first tackle every single time. It's like, and this is like high praise for James Cook. I don't think he's there. He's got a long career left in front of him to kind of get this sort of level. It reminded me of watching LaDainian Tomlinson with the Chargers. Every single time Phillip Rivers threw him a short pass, there was always somebody in coverage nearby. He always shook him almost immediately, whether through his quicks, a stutter step, something like that, or just by like being too slippery for an arm tackle. It was all, that's pretty much automatic. And I was disappointed. I think that the Bills' dominance in the first 3 weeks of the season, or at least two of the 3 weeks of the first, their wins of the season, was largely because Josh Allen was just taking profits in the short area. He was not throwing 20 air yards down the field. He was not trying to push the ball outside the numbers. And then when the Ravens and the Houston Texans stuffed the middle of the field, added more players to the box to shut down the run, there was Joe Brady and Josh Allen have not come up with an answer yet for that.
And that's the answer that they've needed to come up with. We talked about it in the offseason, JJ. We talked about it after that KC game. The Brady scheme seems designed to suck in defenses and make them condense so that you can do, allegedly, what your rifle-armed alien QB is best at doing, which is taking shots downfield. I think the QB can still do that, though I'd love to see him put just a little bit more touch on some of these deep passes as opposed to throwing the 50-yard frozen rope down the field, but that's neither here nor there.
Dan, on this podcast, we say piss missiles.
Sorry, piss missiles. Yes, 50-yard piss missiles. Yeah. Jared's relieved. He's like, because I was thinking piss missile, but I heard frozen rope. So what's the etiquette?
I could have said it five times when we were talking about Aaron Rodgers.
That's right. So yeah. So no, the old feel free to revisit it when we talk about the Jets offense. But it doesn't seem like Brady, and this was his issue in Carolina, knows how to specifically scheme for players. He knows how to scheme concepts. And this everybody eats mantra that the Bills have been rolling out, it feels more like a safety word for Joe Brady because he doesn't know how to necessarily scheme for individual guys. Like, I rewatched a lot of that Houston game because I'm a masochist, but because I care about preparing for this podcast. And you had MVS running those curl routes and those hook routes that Keon Coleman is so adept and so skilled at running. And he is such a he's a bigger body than MVS. It's harder for a guy like Derek Stingley or Lassiter to plow through Keon to get to the ball on one of those routes than it is an MVS. So like the concepts are there, but Brady doesn't seem to have figured out what the strength of each of the guys he has in this pass catcher room are. And to your point, Jared, if the Jets are able to shut down the run, I don't know that Brady has a scheme specific answer yet for how he wants to counter that, because we haven't seen it over the last 2 weeks. And honestly, you can make an argument that we didn't see it in the Arizona game, which was the first game of the season where the Bills were really challenged. That was all just about Josh Allen making plays and not the scheme alleviating any of the stress on Allen. It seems like if the Bills aren't going to run it and they're not going to stay on schedule, Brady doesn't know how to go off of his game sequence script, and he doesn't know how to put specific guys in positions to capitalize on their strengths. And I think that's going to be a real problem against this Jets defense that is still, despite all of my criticisms preseason about the Hassan Reddick thing and not having Jermaine Johnson, this is still a unit that is number 8 in the league in generating QB pressure, and is, I think, number 4 in total sacks this season as well. So if you stop the run and you force Josh into holding down the ball for 3 seconds, I mean, this offensive line's not going to hold up against that Jets pass rush. Like, the answer has to be Brady realizing the talent that he's got in the room and who's good at what, right, and then putting those guys into position to do the thing they do the best, not do what everybody else is doing.
I want to ask the two of you a question, because this is important to me, not only as a postmodern Jets fan, but also as someone that's interested in the outcome of this. In the event that the Bills do struggle continuously to define roles, especially in their receivers room where it's the most missing, do the Jets strike either of you as disciplined enough to capitalize on it? Not talented enough, disciplined enough. And what I specifically mean is, if Josh Allen is running outside the pocket with time, who wins that battle, Josh Allen or the Jets? I'm very intrigued to hear your
opinion. Oh, so I'll say my answer in two parts. One is, should the player Josh Allen is targeting in this scenario, should the player that he's targeting with that throw be anyone other than Sauce Gardner? I think that Josh Allen wins the snap. Reed is pretty good too. So maybe other than those two individuals, I think that Josh Allen wins the snap. If it is either one of those two, it is going to be a pass interference penalty on the Jets because of the way that they play.
That's the magic word.
Yeah. The way that they play, and I think it's real. I think that there's a lot of, you know, NFL fan conspiracy stuff out there about the Chiefs and you know, there was when Brady was in the league. And I do think that there's some preferential treatment that the refs give superstars and the top teams. I think that that's real. I think you can prove it just by looking at the data around how many interceptions Patrick Mahomes has had turned over by pass interference penalties versus every single other quarterback in the NFL over his entire career. It is profound. And so all of that said, I think that the Minnesota Vikings, as the new NFL darlings, got way more favorable pass interference PI calls against Jets defenders than most have seen, because Sauce Gardner is the handsiest cornerback in the league. Dan's not a fan.
Every play.
And here's the thing, all right, and you said the magic words, Sauce Gardner overrated, so now I have to go on my rant, right? Like, I hear all the time from people in the media, well, there's defensive holding on every pass play. No, guys are hand-checking, guys are fighting for position. The difference with Sauce is Sauce has a preponderance of going high on guys, like shoulder pads and above. And to me, that's what makes his style of play reckless. And that's what makes a style of play overrated, is that he is willing to, he doesn't, when he loses hand check and he loses positionality, he goes immediately above the shoulder pads. And to me, that's just not above board. And that's why I think he's overrated. Like, I would say that he's a dirty player. I would even add that to it.
And this is where I struggle with the fantasy footballification of football understanding, because like, there's a pretty high bar for shutdown corners in recent memory in New York. Darrell Revis is the best individual defensive player I've seen live. And the reason why you knew that is you never threw to him. Like, the idea that teams are willing to go at him because they're confident they can draw a penalty or they're confident that somebody could punk him is enough of an indication to me that we're not at that level with him. I think he has... I don't want my words to come back to bite me, but I guess the way I would say it is I am less confident in his decision-making abilities, especially when improvising, than you guys appear to be. I understand why he gets the credit he gets. Like, I think Josh Allen can mess with him. That doesn't mean Josh Allen's head will be in the right place, because he also struggles to make decisions.
I was just going to say, we all know Josh Allen can do that. He can do miraculous things when the chips are down. He also can try to lateral a ball like he's playing Tecmo Super Bowl or NCAA Football 15, on a 3rd and 19 while he's 16 yards away from the first down marker. Like, that's... it is a double-edged sword. We have to play the light and the dark with Josh Allen. I do think you're right about the Josh Allen we saw early in the season and different times, especially in the playoff, like playoff Josh Allen, can 100% manipulate a safety or a corner with his eyes to bring somebody open just behind their coverage, dump it over for a 40-yard gain. I mean, that's a pretty regular play that Bills fans can experience. The question is, how the game is going at the time that that play happens is going to determine whether he does that or throws a crossbody interception that's returned for a touchdown, right? Like, because...
Spoken like a guy that watched the Texans
game. Yeah. Or like a guy who's watched every snap in Josh Allen's career. If he is in sugar high Josh mode, it is 100% going to be a turnover and a messy one. Or he's going to take some hit that's just absolutely horrific to look at and would literally sideline any mortal quarterback for the rest of his career, maybe. But Josh Allen will shake it off, take some smelling salts, and be back in.
Yeah. I want to go back to Sauce real quick, and I want to tie it into your point, JJ, about Josh Allen. I think defensive linemen have a greater impact on the success rate of Josh Allen's game than I think individual DBs do. Sure. I actually think Josh's post-snap processing has gotten a lot better over the years. The problem is, like, does he have enough time, or are guys getting separation in that magical 2.5 second window where we know Josh is absolutely lethal? Are they getting that separation and hitting their routes on time in order to let him do that? And listen, I think Josh has made a habit of picking on certain DBs. Jalen Ramsey comes to mind. Like, Josh has an amazing pass rating against him. I don't think Sauce is going to be a no-fly zone in this game. And I got a couple of numbers to tell you why. One, his QB rating allowed when nearest defender is a 118. For context, league average is about 100. So he is allowing above average passer ratings. Catch rate over expected is 8.5%. His QBs are completing nearly 70% of their pass attempts when they go near Sauce. And he's already allowed a touchdown this season. Not to mention that he is generating one of the lowest tight window throw percentages in the entire Jets secondary at just under 30%. Like, I mean, these are pretty average numbers for a DB who is supposed to be elite. And I think Josh is going to feel fine testing Sauce as long as it's a Khalil Shakir he's matched up on or a Dalton Kincaid that he's matched up on. I do think Sauce is skilled enough to shut down a Matt Collins. I think he presents a problem for a Keon Coleman. But I think if Josh sees the right matchup, there's no reason why you wouldn't go after Sauce like he would go after a Jalen Ramsey. You know what I mean? So I think there is a benefit there. I want to segue real quick here, if you guys are good with it, to talking about the other side of the ball. Bills defense against this Jets offense. And I mentioned that 2.5 second mark. That is a number, I think, that is going to ring very, very important for both of these QBs. So heading into this game, the metrics are so interesting. Josh, right now, amongst all qualified passers on quick passes, so 2.5 seconds or under, is currently leading the league in EPA per dropback when he gets his throw out in 2.5 seconds. Aaron Rodgers is completing the fourth highest percentage of passes in the league this year of passes that are 2.5 seconds or under. These are two QBs who we think of like to hit the deep ball and like to look for their guy downfield, but are at their best when they get it out quickly. So for Aaron Rodgers, what do the Bills need to do? And I know the answer is probably feels easy and it's pressure him, but what do the Bills really need to do to make Rodgers hang on to the ball and question his first and second reaction throws? And I'll put it out to either of you. What do you guys think?
I'm actually really interested in hearing JJ's take first, because it's going to be more Bills oriented, because I know what I would do.
Yeah.
I'm interested here.
So I'll say this. I'll say that from a Bills perspective, I don't know that you get a better outside corner tandem than Christian Benford and Rasul Douglas for the Buffalo Bills right now. In the game last week against Houston, they gave up one huge touchdown to Nico Collins, and that was all at the fault of the rookie safety Cole Bishop, who's likely to start again this week if Taylor Rapp doesn't clear concussion protocol. And so and then on top of that, you know, Diggs was targeted 8 times and caught 4 of those balls. All 4 of his catches were against Cam Lewis in the slot. He didn't even try to hit Diggs or Tank Dell against Rasul Douglas or Christian Benford in coverage. Though they're playing outrageously good outside coverage. The Bills have been vulnerable in the middle of the field. And when the Christian Benford or Rasul Douglas are the closest defender, they tend to shut things down. It's really the problem of the Bills missing Matt Milano, missing Terrell Bernard for a few games, missing Taron Johnson, an all-pro slot corner who may be back for this game. And so for me, when I'm looking at this, the way that the Bills can shut down his first or second reaction throw is to make sure that they get extra attention to Garrett Wilson and Alan Lazard, period. Like if they can just shade a safety towards Garrett Wilson every play, they're going to goad Aaron Rodgers into checkdowns and potentially making some risky throws. Because he targeted Garrett Wilson like, 18 times? Something. It was ridiculous.
He was the most targeted receiver in the NFL last week.
Yes, yeah.
So I want to combine your two things because I think you both said really interesting things. And I think JJ's completely spot. Your comment about Aaron Rodgers' aptitude in short yard situations is the thing I really want to zoom in on. Garrett Wilson's receptions, while, you know, fantastic if you own him in a PPR league, were nothing burgers. You know, even when he gets cheap touchdowns, he's catching the ball for 5 yards almost every time. And when he has to actually rely on a route tree option or an adjustment at the line of scrimmage, there's a miscommunication on almost every play. So I think that, you know, it's hard for me to say is zone the answer or is man the answer, because that is when you're playing into the hands of, regardless of how I feel about Aaron Rodgers, the person, a unanimous first ballot Hall of Fame. The flip, though, is I think if we bunch up 5 to 10 yard stuff and the only 5 yard option we allow is something that could potentially be 5 yards on a check down, but he catches the ball behind the line, like JJ's talking about, or a like one step drop quick slant, which is his bread and butter right now, Tyler Lazard rules. Catch the ball, and we're going to treat it like it's a run play, and we're going to stop you for 4 yards or less. I think that's your strategy, because then what happens is he gets impatient, he tries to beat you deep, and the Jets have not illustrated, forget about Aaron Rodgers' arm, all of his deep balls never end up within 10 yards of a receiver because someone makes a mistake. So force them to prove that they can do that without making a mistake. I don't think they can.
What is your confidence level, JJ, that the Bills pass rush is actually going to create a problem for Aaron Rodgers? The Bills right now are the 17th team when it comes to pressure rate, which is extraordinarily low. Babich dialed up some blitzes against CJ Stroud, and which we talked about in the Houston game, that were wildly ineffective. Rodgers tends to be better than average against the blitz. So is the solution hope that your organic four-man rush is going to get to Rodgers, or do we see Babich dial as something a little bit more exotic to try to fool Rodgers into making some mistakes, questioning his read or holding onto the ball? Because I'll be honest with you, I don't think Greg Rousseau, Casey Tuhill, Ed Oliver, if he plays in this game, like I just don't think I've seen enough against quality offensive lines from this defensive line to have any confidence that they're going to get pressure.
I'm with you in being really underwhelmed by the defensive line. And even all the way back to the games that the Bills were winning and the defensive line looked good, largely that was because the defensive line could pin their ears back and not have to stay disciplined in run defense. It with Braylon Allen and Breece Hall, like if this game is close throughout, which I think we all sort of think it might be, there is no way that those four down linemen for the Bills, no matter what rotation is in at that time, are going to be able to just key pass only. Because that was it. Like the best games we've seen from Von Miller, Greg Rousseau. Von Miller's of course suspended right now, but Greg Rousseau, Casey Tuhill with a good rush, Javon Solomon, the rookie, with a good rush. Most of those situations were like long and late downs when the Bills were ahead by two or more scores, where the team absolutely, they knew that the opponent was going to pass. That being the only time that the Bills pass rush shows up tells me that the only way they're going to affect Aaron Rodgers is delayed pressure with Terrell Bernard, because I think that even though you're sacrificing your best coverage linebacker, he's also incredibly efficient when rushing. And especially on delayed, kind of where you just let him choose a gap in the middle three gaps to shoot 1 second after the snap and hope that Aaron Rodgers, you know, the coverage, as I mentioned before, is muddying things up enough that he can't get that first read, because that's one way I think that they can do it. But I agree. I mean, in the Houston kind of recap, Bobby Babbage's blitzes were not effective against C.J. Stroud. And I think that Aaron Rodgers is a better player at replacing the blitz with the ball than C.J. Stroud at this point in his young career. And so, but I did see some vulnerability when I rewatched the Minnesota and New York game from last weekend. Aaron Rodgers was not great at shifting protections. And there were a few times that free rushers, particularly nickel blitzes, were just straight on top of him. Like, and that's something that I don't know what's happening. I don't know if that's communication issue with the line. I don't know if that's a communication issue with the wide receivers. I know that that was something that happened to Josh Allen too, is that there were players who should have been hot reads with the blitz, pre-blitzer coming, who didn't even look for the ball in the Bills game. Same thing happened with the Jets. And so that's, you know, if the Bills are looking at that, if Bobby Babbage is paying attention, you should see, you know, who am I going to target and hope there's a communication issue? Because that could be a huge impactful play. And Aaron Rodgers tends to play worse after he's gotten a little bit dirty in the pocket and taken some hits. Because, I mean, age, you know, injuries, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. Last question, and then I want to move on to predictions sure to go wrong for this. Do we think the Jets have a get-right game with regard to their rushing attack against the Bills? The Bills' rushing defense is absolutely atrocious. But by metrics, not talent, the rushing efficiency rating of the Jets has been somehow worse. So the Bills are ranked 22nd in rushing defense this year in rushing defense efficiency, and they're ranked 24th in overall DVOA. The Jets are 28th in rushing efficiency and 27th in offensive rushing DVOA. Like, I hear Breece Hall, I hear Braylon Allen, I hear a Nate Hackett scheme, which he can't. Spent time with LaFleur. If he can do anything, it's scheme up a run game. But this run game has been non-existent for the Jets, particularly over the last few weeks. Is this a get-right game for that? Because it feels like the key to sort of limiting the Bills' defense and their ability to rattle Rodgers is to simply let them hand the ball off and attack the Bills where they're the weakest. Do we think offensive coordinator Aaron Rodgers will allow himself to be taken out of the game early in that way? And do we think he'll hand it off, or is he going to want this to be the Rodgers show now that Sal is gone?
I'm really happy you asked this question the way you asked it, because I have this daydream sequence where Ulrich has grabbed Nathaniel Hackett by the collar and said to him, if Breece Hall does not have 25 touches by the end of the fourth quarter, you're out of a job. And the Jets were competitive last season. They weren't good enough to make the playoffs, but they won more games than some because of the amount of touches that they were able to give to Breece Hall. They have more depth at that position now because they stole a guy. And what we're looking at, to me, is the ultimate Aaron Rodgers, I just surrendered the whole franchise to you. Can you set your ego aside for 1 week? And I don't think he can do it, which is why I think that the Bills are going to win the game.
Fascinating. Wow. Oh, my God.
That's a great segue into prediction sure to go wrong.
Let's hit it. All right, let me tell you guys where we're at here. So this line opened at Bills favored by 2.5. It is down to 2, which means that there is some thought here that the Jets might pull this out, especially after the Saleh firing. Over-under on this game is 41 points. That is the lowest over-under we have seen as of yet for total points scored for a Bills game this season. So the Bills are slight favorites heading into this, but it doesn't feel like... It doesn't feel like either team should be a favorite at this point with the way they're playing into this. But AFC East supremacy is on the line. So, Jared, being in our guest host spot, let's start with you. What is your final prediction for the score of this game?
I think the Bills are going to win by 3 touchdowns.
Damn. Oh. I don't think they're going to score 3 touchdowns. But all right, let's hear it.
Nothing like two people that are invested in voting against their respected franchises.
This is why you fit so well on the pod. Your vibe of negativity with your team is amazing.
This is not the same problem that the Jets had, but with Robert Saleh coaching them, has not been resolved. Let's really make sure we have this down. They fired the defensive guy who has a good defense because the offense is not performing and the offensive guy is still there. So what happens to the Jets? They either give up a couple of big plays early, or they're on the field for three times longer than they want to be defensively, and they give up a couple touchdowns late. The last time I saw the Bills angry after a bad performance was Brady's first game as offensive coordinator, and they drilled the Jets into the ground. I was there in person to watch the public burial. It was so. I think we're looking at a very similar situation. I do not think this is not the Jets locker room is not a locker room that's cohesive. They're not a locker room that's together. This whole we're going to rally around the new coach doesn't work as well when the team's not invested. And until the Jets can prove for multiple weeks on edge that they're invested in improving as a team and growing together, I will not predict them to win a game or compete in the game. My gut, 30-13.
Wow. All right. Bills 30 burger. JJ, what about you?
Yeah, I think this, I think that you see a couple of things here. I'm going to base my answer on historical data. So what we have with historical data in Josh Allen's career is that he's pretty terrible against the Jets. For some reason or another, I know Saleh was part of that, and the way that they played him was part of that. But I do think that there's just something about it, and it's on the road. It's on Monday night. So those are factors that are probably going to play against Josh Allen a little bit. I do recognize your points, Jared, and I do agree that before this past week against the Houston Texans, the Bills were the winningest team coming off a loss in Sean McDermott's whole career, right? Like they do not stack losses. But seeing how inept they looked against the Texans on offense has me very worried in that the Baltimore Ravens set a blueprint, the Houston Texans followed it to a T, and the Bills didn't have an answer. If Khalil Shakir can play, I think the Bills will have an answer. He is a very, very good player. I think he is exactly what they need to open things up when nothing else is working, in that he can separate even from very good corners. So I think that that's a big component. I think that if Taylor Rapp is playing, then that's a big component. Ed Oliver as well can press the middle of the pocket, which is, you know, kryptonite for Aaron Rodgers, especially with his limited mobility with age and injury. So really, for me, it's if the Bills players who are injured are able to get back for this one, and Taron Johnson, I mean, is a complete X factor. If he's in, I think the Bills win, just period. Regardless of any of the other player status. I'm saying Bills 24, Jets 21. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be tight at the end. I think that even if the locker room's not cohesive, I think that Aaron Rodgers his ego might carry him to greatness in this situation of proving that it was correct that he remains and Saleh is gone.
All right. I'm going to keep this short and sweet. I have never picked the Bills on this podcast to lose. I am picking them to lose until Joe Brady shows me a counterpunch or an ability to scheme for a guy on that offensive team, offensive pass catcher room. I just don't think right now the Bills have the firepower to crack through what is a solid, imperfect, but solid Jets defense. The Jets have played the Bills extraordinarily well at home over the past few years too. And Breece Hall has had some of his best career games against the Bills. Bills can't stop the run. If they choose to unlock Braylon Allen and Breece Hall in this game, I think the Jets win pretty handily. I think final score is Jets 21, Bills 17. I think the Bills are going to go down. They're going to go to 3-3. We're going to hit our very typical panic mode that we hit with Bills Mafia, where this team is 500 where they shouldn't be. And then a whole bunch of calls for McDermott to get fired are going to get a lot louder. So that's where I'm at with that.
Three super polarizing predictions.
I know, really.
We're all over the one of us is going to hit.
Someone's got to hit, right? But like we're all mired in recency bias, and I'll admit it for me, of what we've seen out of our squads over the last few weeks, right? For me, I've lived this movie with the Bills before, where they look like absolute world beaters And then they just hit an impossibly rough stretch where it seems they lose in a new way every week. I think they're going to find a new way to lose in this game. And they're all going to say the same thing after the press conference. Our backs are against the wall, but we've been here before and we've done this and we know we can come back. And sure, maybe you can. But shit, wouldn't it be nice to have a 2-game lead on the Jets heading into the next quarter of the season, opposed to have to rattle off 7 straight wins like you did last season and the year before to even compete for the division? Like, you don't need to always play with your backs against the wall, but I don't think this coaching staff or this roster constructed like knows how to not do that, if that makes any kind of sense. This seems to be where they are most comfortable when they are 500, when they shouldn't be, and everybody is doubting them, and they've got to make this impossible run of wins. Like, I, again, watched this movie before. The Bills will lose. They will be 500 heading into their next game against the, who is it? Do we get the Titans next?
Titans, then Seahawks.
Yep. Yeah. Heading into their next game against the Titans. That'll be some stupid 17-9 game that the Bills somehow pull off, right? Like, we've just seen the script with this squad before, and we talked a little bit about it in our, sorry, I said I would keep this short and sweet, but now I'm off. We talked about a little bit about this in our Houston recap. Like, the roster turnover, the coordinator turnover, the consistency that you can hit every single beat of a Bills season has everything to do with the head coach. And until that changes, this is the way this team is going to play. So they're going to lose. They're going to be 500, and the Jets are going to be 3-3 in first place in the AFC East when it's all said and done at the end of this week. All right, let's move on to some props. I've got 2. James Cook and, as a combo deal, Breece Hall, over under 75.5 rushing yards apiece. I think both teams are going to attack the opposing team in the run game. I just think the squad that doesn't, if they don't, they're dumb, right? With how bad both of these defenses are against the run. I think it could be a big day for both running backs. Where are you guys at with that?
I'll smash the over. I'll probably fail on it because I could see Breece Hall easily getting 75 against this Bills defense. I think that James Cook will probably have 150 all-purpose yards, but maybe more of them are in the pass than in the run. I don't know that he gets 75 of them, half of them in by running traditionally between the tackles or outside.
I think that'd be a good sign for this Bills offense if he can jack up his pass catching total. So yeah, I would take that. Jared, what about you?
I'm with you, Dan. I think this is an easy over. JJ has me second guessing myself because I was thinking about total yards and not rushing yards, but I still think based on the plan of attack and the recipe to beat the other team that it's going to be run heavy.
I'm going to take the over for Hall because, again, I just think the Jets would be supremely dumb if they didn't take advantage of his success against this Bills team. The Bills for Cook, I think I'm gonna also take the over, but I wouldn't surprise JJ to your point if it is the under, because there is still some weird personnel groupings that are going on with the Bills at this point. I just don't know where they're at. They cycle out Cook way too frequently for me. They seem reluctant to give him the ball in a traditional run game. Like right now, he's their most, Josh Allen included, their most consistent offensive weapon. I have confidence he's got the ability to do it. I don't know that the coaching staff will put him in a position to succeed and do it, is my only hesitance. But yeah, I'll smash the over on both. I've got one more, but I want to kick it to you guys. Any prop bets you want to throw in here?
I've got just one, over under 2.5 sacks against Josh Allen and Aaron Rodgers.
Is this another combo?
Yes. Combo. You got to give me an over or an under for 2.5 on either Josh Allen or Aaron Rodgers.
I think Aaron Rodgers is definitely going to get sacked 3 more times.
Okay.
I would not take it on Josh Allen.
Josh is so hard to bring down, okay. But the Jets are one of the teams that have had success in doing it. And Will McDonald, in the absence of Jermaine Johnson, has proved to be an absolute world beater. He is currently recording the highest pressure rate for any defensive end with 50 or more pass rush attempts this season. And he's speedy and athletic enough to chase down Josh. So I'll take the over for both, right? I'll take the over for both.
I am going to hit the under for both because I think that this is that both teams are going to be anxious about that. I think that that's the one piece that both offensive coordinators are going to try to minimize as much as possible the time that the Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen are holding the ball. Given Aaron Rodgers and Josh Allen both taking a bit of a beating last week and showing some signs of, you know, potential injury slowness, you know, those sorts of things.
All right. I'm gonna piggyback off of that because my last prop is a sack one, and then Jared, we'll kick it to you if you got one for us. Greg Rousseau, over under, half a sack. Does he come out of what I like to call Jerry Hughes territory, JJ? Where God,
why do you gotta dog my guy like that?
Well, I'm just saying, like, so here's the comp. Jerry Hughes, last season had one game where he sacked QB four times, finished with 6 sacks on the season. Greg Rousseau has had one game this year where he has recorded his entire sack total for the year, which is 3, and that was the Arizona game over a month ago. Doing a great job getting pressure, not doing a great job bringing the QB down. Does he get out of the Jerry Hughes zone and record a sack, or will it just be pressure maven all the way?
I think he does. I think he gets a sack of his own, or at least a half sack.
Yeah, Jared, is that what you're at too? You're just, it's like
gonna,
Rodgers is a statue.
This is going to be like watching Major League, but it's football. They're going to, like, amazing. I really think the Jets are going to burn this week, guys.
Amazing. I'm going to say under. And the only reason I'm going to say under is Rousseau has not proven that he can be a reliable solo sack getter without someone like a Von Miller on the opposite side of him. And with Von still out and Epineza being okay, but not like consistently great on the other side, I just think they're going to key in on Rousseau, and I just don't think he's going to have it. So I'm going to say under. I don't think he records a sack, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about all of this. Let me just put it that way. Jared, do you have a prop for us?
I mean, not game pertaining. We could bet, you know, over or under times Jared is going to stand up and yell, "I effing told you so," at the television. I would set that at 10.5.
I'll take the over on that. I'll smash the door.
I will take the over as well. And then it should be followed up by, they should just hire me to run this thing.
I don't know enough about football, but I'll listen better, I swear.
Oh, God, amazing. Amazing. All right. Well, it has been, I hope, Jared, you got what you were looking for out of this, a little catharsis. We appreciate you guest hosting with us as well. It's always great to get your insights on the Jets. For all of you listening at home, like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Google, Apple, Spotify. And as always, go Bills.
Go Bills.